him. I don't know. Usually no, but I haven't really said so. I twist a piece of hair around my finger. But what about you and Becca? I shake my head. It's never going to be the right time for us, Beau.
I haven't told Becca we're not dating, if that's what you're asking.
So what? You were going to leave her hanging?
It's not like we're boyfriend and girlfriend.
Well, neither were we, I tell him. Jerking the wheel, he turns off into a random alleyway and puts the truck in park. He unbuckles his seatbelt and moves toward me.
I want more, he says. I want more with you. I want to hold hands in public. I want to drive you home from work and give you a kiss goodnight, and talk on the phone so late we fall asleep.
I bite down on my bottom lip to stop it from quivering. There are so many reasons why we are a bad idea. We have a track record, real bona fide proof. If I were to shake my magic eight ball, I can almost guarantee that it would tell me, outlook not so good. But Beau is undeterred.
You didn't know me last year, Willow Dean. I'm so glad you didn't. I was a dick. All I cared about was getting out of this place. I fucked up with you this summer, I know that. And I'm not letting you go again. I'll talk to Becca and be 100% clear with her. There won't be any misunderstanding.
It's not that simple, Beau. Maybe it is for you, but not for me. He narrows his gaze.
This is what I want. I want you to be my girlfriend. I want to put a label on this. I want everyone to know exactly how I feel about you, Willow Dean. I think that sounds pretty simple.
I shouldn't, but I move to kiss him. My nerves hum, and this moment when my body feels both chaotic and determined is what was missing with Mitch. He pulls back.
I want your answer first.
I break our eye contact, letting my gaze wander everywhere but him. I don't know if I can handle the stares and the whispers. Even if I can get over the total self-revulsion I feel when he touches me, really touches me, I don't think I can deal with people always asking in astonishment, like it's some water-to-wine miracle, how we ended up together. And now I know exactly how Lucy felt when she decided she couldn't get on that plane to Dollywood. All those years, I thought she was only standing in her own way. And now I know she had no choice. When your options are limited to being miserable in private or being mortified in public, there is no choice. I can't get on the plane. My mom's right. I will never be happy in this body. Not really. I'll never say it out loud, but she's right. I want so badly to prove her wrong that I almost say yes. But instead, I chew the skin around my thumb and say, I need to think about it. Because I can't bear to tell him no. Not yet. I want to live with the possibility of what could be, if only for a couple days.
Chapter 49. I've only had a serious hangover once. Ellen and I went to a lock-in at Tim's mom's church, and Tim, being the good boyfriend he is, brought us wine coolers stolen from his dad. Ellen and I poured them into Sonic cups and kept refilling them until her mom picked us up the next morning. We slid into the back seat of the car and fell asleep slumped up against each other. Ellen and I slept all day, and when we woke up, I felt like I'd been asleep for years. Everything was too bright, and the only thing I wanted was to chomp on greasy food before going back to bed. A Monday morning, I am hungover from a weekend spent with Beau. My entire body is drowsy, and I have to extract myself from bed in stages, one limb at a time. We probably spent 8 hours studying for our world history test, but I can barely even remember the review questions, let alone the answers. And my Friday afternoon at the hideaway feels like a memory tucked deep into the past. When Mitch walks into second period, I'm studying my notes, trying to recall some of what I studied. It's like my brain has decided to purge information to make space for the events of the last 2 days. when his huge frame invades the narrow doorway. The memory of him hits me like a whiplash. Mitch and I exit in this weird gray area. But I'm thinking it's grayer for me than it is for him.
Hey, he says. I texted you a few times this weekend.
Ah, yeah, I'm sorry. I was drowning in world history notes. It was one of those things, like, I'd see your text, and then say I'd message you when I was done reading, and then I'd forget. I'm doing that crazy babbling thing. His features are loose, but his eyes are tense and focused.
The pageant's in, like, 2 weeks. I was thinking...
He wipes a few beads of sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand.
Maybe I could be your escort. I went to the pageant a few years ago, and I know girls have to get guys to escort them. I could, like, rent a tux. Is that dumb? You were probably supposed to ask me, but you wrote on your face for Sadie Hawkins, and I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, that would be good. Great. I want to take the words right back. This is more than a friendly gesture. Yet selfishly, I do need an escort. And Beau didn't technically offer. Besides, if I can't handle the idea of walking down a hallway with him, how will I cope with him escorting me in front of the entire town?
Okay. Cool. Should I get something to match your dress? Like prom or whatever?
I think black is good. And you can wear a suit. You don't have to rent a tux. He shakes his head.
My mom's idea. She's all on board for this.
Oh, God. His mom. Great!
She really loves that you're doing this. She says it's brave.
I smile. But I don't want it to be brave. I want it to be normal. After school, Millie tracks me down in a parking lot, which isn't hard since I'm just standing around, hoping to catch Ellen on her own. Today, Millie is a ball of mint green, including her backpack. Her hair is pulled into a ponytail with a matching scrunchie, because Millie might be the only person I know who still wears scrunchies.
Hey, she says. So Friday was pretty great.
Yeah, it was. She rocks back and forth on her feet, her hands twisting together.
My family is kind of religious. Actually, really religious. And my parents. Well, they wouldn't be super happy if they knew where I was and who we were with.
I feel my shoulders slump. Okay.
I say that because I always thought people like Lee and Dale were wrong. Like, they were living in sin.
I hate phrases like that. Jesus vocab, Elle would call them. Things you learn in church that are hammered into you until they're so normal that you expect everyone else who doesn't go to church to know what you mean. Millie shakes her head.
My words are coming out all wrong. What I'm trying to say is that I liked Lee and Dale and I had fun that night at the hideaway. I keep thinking about it, and they're good people. I wish everyone could see that.
She smiles.
I just wanted to let you know.
Something I can only describe as pride swells against my chest. I grip Millie's shoulder. I'm glad.
Pageant piggies!
Someone yells from the other side of the parking lot, breaking the moment between us.
Oink, oink! Eat shit!
I bark back. I turn to Millie. I'm sorry. She tucks a stray hair behind her ear and takes a step back.
It's whatever. It's fine.
I knew this was bound to happen eventually. With the pageant 2 weeks away, the town's attention is all on us. And in our case, that might not be a good thing. Millie pulls on the straps of her backpack.
I was thinking of having you, Amanda, and Hannah over for a slumber party. Amanda will go, but I don't think Hannah will if you don't. So, will you?
As a rule, I don't do slumber parties. Unless you count spending the night at Elle's. Nothing about sleeping in little more than a t-shirt and underwear on Millie's floor while her parents check in on us every few hours appeals to me. But I don't have it in me to say no to her right now.
Sure, I say.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
The next night after I pick my mom up from work, she says she's made some adjustments to my dress and would I mind trying it on? She leaves me again in her room to change by myself. The top half of the dress is a perfect fit. I can't even imagine how long it must have taken her to get the darts right. But the bottom half is something else altogether. She said she would take it out as far as she could, but it's still snug. I feel fine in it. I'm not embarrassed or anything. But I see it in her frown. The top is good, I say. Like, perfect. She presses her palm against my back.
Try standing up a little straighter.
I do. She makes a tisk noise. The sound of her disappointment is like needles under my fingernails.
Mom, it's fine, okay? I love it. Dumplin', she says. It's hugging on your hips like a straitjacket.
She runs her fingers along the seams.
I can't take it any further without risking it splitting.
Mom, it's good. I only have to wear it for like 10 minutes. Her lips twitch.
What?
I turn around to face her without our reflections standing between us.
Just say it, Mom. Whatever you're thinking, say it.
She waves me off and starts to pack up her sewing box on her dresser.
I just thought you might make an effort to slim down a little for the pageant.
She turns back to me.
I mean, are you even taking this seriously? Because you know this isn't a joke. I let you register because I expected you to take this seriously.
Her words send me stumbling.
So the dress doesn't fit because you expected me to lose weight?
I wave my hands up and down the length of my form.
Mom, this is me. This is my body.
She shakes her head.
I knew you'd take that the wrong way. You always see the worst in everything I say. I can't do this anymore. I'm not the bad guy here. Then who is?
She's silent, and the words she doesn't say hang there between us like hulking icicles on the verge of breaking.
It's too snug, she finally says. I'm not going to prove it for the pageant. It's not about you being my daughter. I would do the same with anyone else. It's inappropriate.
Mom, I feel good. My voice starts out even and calm. This dress makes me feel like someone I didn't know I could be. I've never owned anything like it. But if when you see this,
when you see me, you think it's a pity? That it's a shame I didn't lose a few? Then screw you, Mom! Try harder!
There's the still moment as I'm waiting for her to leave. Then I realize it's me standing here in her room. I pick up my dress so as not to trip on the hem, and then I leave her there in that lonely little room that she'll live in for the rest of her life, with her sash and her crown and her seafoam dress. Chapter 50. After work on Friday night, Beau gives me a ride like he has for the last 2 weeks. But this time he's not taking me home. We roll to a stop outside Millie's house. Ron let us both off a little early so I could get here before midnight. I pull my overnight bag into my lap and mentally prepare myself for bonding time. The pageant has become such an afterthought for me. I think I originally signed up because I was so sure I had something to prove. I don't know if it was to myself or my mom or everyone, but with each passing day, I feel more and more like I have nothing left to say.
So y'all are getting together to practice stuff for the pageant?
I shake my head. Not really. More game planning, I think. We gotta stick together. His brow is heavy with confusion.
So you four all enter the pageant together?
I nod.
I'm totally on board with the idea that anyone who wants to should enter this thing. But why does it have to be such a big deal?
Grinning, I turn to him. It's kind of like how you keep going to Mass even though you don't go to Holy Cross. It's something the team does together, right? But just because you're not on the team doesn't mean you shouldn't go. And just because we don't look like beauty queens doesn't mean we shouldn't enter.
I guess it would be really cheesy of me to say I think you're 10 times hotter and smarter than any beauty queen.
My cheeks burn.
Yeah. Super cheesy.
I didn't know people still did slumber parties, he says.
Well, I guess they do. Elle and I always spent the night at each other's houses, but we never called it a party. In the last few days, I told Beau all about Elle and me and how we weren't really talking. He seemed to think we'd get past it, but I just can't seem to find that same foresight. I open the door. He reaches for my hand.
Willow Dean, have you thought any more about what we talked about? You know I wasn't kidding, right?
It's so impossible for me not to say yes, to tell him that I want to be his girlfriend. I need a little more time. He nods.
Okay. Time.
Amanda stands at the door with her jaw dropped so low it melts into her chest. Millie cranes her neck from behind Amanda.
Oh my God, says Amanda. That was peach butt.
I shush her and wave them both inside. The first thing that strikes me about Millie's house is how everything, from the fake flowers to the paint to the throw pillows, matches. Millie is a lavender cotton ball in her matching sweatsuit, socks, and headband. It's like she went online and searched slumber party outfits and came up with this gem from a Babysitter's Club book cover or something. Amanda is in her soccer shorts and a t-shirt, but she's barefoot. It's the first time I've ever seen her without platform shoes on, and I don't want to be that jerk who stares, so I keep my eyes on her face instead, which still feels totally obvious.
Okay, but real talk, she says. He dropped you off. Here. You were in his car. Tell us everything.
Millie pulls us down the hallway and past the TV room where her parents are watching some PBS series with British people talking in hushed voices about scandalous things, like who's going to serve Lord and Lady their chilled pea soup. Wait till you hear about my pageant dress fiasco. I hope y'all are having better luck, I say. Millie shakes her head and yanks on my hand, pulling me to her bedroom door, which I know is hers because a wooden heart with her name painted in cursive tells me so. Amanda covers her mouth, stifling her own laughter. What? I ask. Millie's eyes meet mine, and there's a desperation in her I've never seen before. She opens the bedroom door, and on a lavender beanbag in all black is Hannah. She doesn't even look up. Millie takes my bag and sets it on the foot of her bed.
Okay, sit down.
I do, right there on the floor. Millie sits in this crazy wicker throne chair in the corner of her room. It looks like something out of her retirement home, but oddly enough, it suits her. I wish I could take a picture of her in this huge chair with her matching outfit, ringlet curls, and sloped nose.
You can't talk about the pageant in front of my parents.
Why? I ask.
Because they don't know she's in it, says Hannah.
With a huge grin plastered across her face, Amanda slides down onto the floor in front of Millie.
But what about the parental consent form?
It's more a rhetorical question because I know the answer. I can't imagine Millie being capable of such deception. She licks her lips.
I forged my mother's signature.
Hannah sits scrolling through her phone with her lips sealed but smiling. Millie's round face crumples a little. Her cheeks tinge an even deeper pink than normal.
I asked them, but when I first found out you were entering the pageant.
I nod along with her, encouraging her to tell me more.
And my mom took a few days to think about it, but they said no. They said they couldn't have that on their conscience, that I'd get made fun of, and that it didn't seem like a very Christ-like way to spend my time.
Hannah scoffs. I roll my eyes at her, which doesn't matter because she can't spare a glance away from her phone. But what are you going to do? The pageant is next weekend. I mean, you're going to be in the paper, and then everyone will know. Sure, we'd been heckled a few times, but once that paper goes to print, there's no turning back. People like Patrick Thomas would have good material on me for the rest of our lives.
I don't know.
She chews the skin around her thumbnail, and her eyes search my face, looking for some kind of answer or something. anything that might tell her it will be okay. I see it now. I see now what the stakes are for her and how she wants nothing more than to break out of the delicate little box her parents have built for her. It'll be okay, I say. It's going to be fine.
I think it's badass, says Amanda. I would have never thought you had something like that in you. Oh, I think she's got room in there for plenty, murmurs Hannah.
That's it. I am so over her attitude.
What is with you?
I spit.
Why are you even here? Can't you just hate on something in your own house?
Will, says Millie.
It's true, I say. Millie invited you over here to her home, and all you've done since I walked in is stick your face in your phone and brood.
Hannah finally looks up. Her face is all amusement.
Oh, like you even give a shit about these two. You're just here to feel better about yourself. This is some kind of sad circle jerk.
I feel my nostrils flare.
It's true, she adds. That's the only reason you're sticking with this little freak show. You were an asshole to your best friend, and now all you have is us.
Stop, says Millie, cutting the cord of tension between us.
Let's talk interview questions. I tracked down some from a few years ago for us to practice with. Don't talk to me like you know the whole story, I tell Hannah. Because you don't.
I turn to Millie.
Is there somewhere I can change?
Millie points me to the bathroom across the hallway. Every little mauve detail matches, including the house-shaped shelf that holds spare toilet paper. Like in Millie's room, there are cheesy inspirational quotes and frames. My personal favorite? A smile is a curve that sets everything straight. Still on her wicker throne, Millie says,
Okay, so, like our packets say, there will be an interview session the Thursday before the pageant. The judges will grade us on that, and then combine it with our live interview during the pageant. I think that's one or two questions.
And we don't know the questions beforehand?
Asks Amanda.
No,
I say, letting sleeping memories of my childhood spent backstage resurface.
No, and this is where they like to stump you.
Interview is the component with the highest point value. So if we...
Millie's interrupted by a light knock. The door creaks open. Her mom, with hair tall enough to hold a few family secrets, stands with eyes brimming like she might cry or something.
We're headed to bed.
Okay.
Millie bites in on her lips so that they disappear.
I'll have breakfast ready for you girls tomorrow morning. We're so happy to see Millie have some girlfriends over.
We're so happy to be here, says Hannah, her voice flat.
Millie's smile is tight.
Good night, Mom.
Night, night, sugar.
After she shuts the door, we discuss the point value breakdown and how ridiculous it is that swimsuit accounts for more than talent. Once Millie is sure her parents are asleep, we head to the TV room and watch a few videos of former pageants that I stole from my mom's stash. The more contestants that grace the screen, the more obvious it is how much we do not fit. There's the odd black sheep here and there, but never anything like the four of us. It makes me feel small, like a blip on the history of this little pageant. What about next year? Or the year after that? Soon we'd be forgotten, and what would be the point then? Millie feverishly takes notes throughout the night, while Amanda asks questions like,
What if we get wedgies during the swimwear part? Or, do you think there's ever been any major wardrobe disasters, like a nip slip? Will we get bathroom breaks?
Hannah looks up from her phone to say,
This is kind of depressing. I mean, this is the actual highlight of these girls' lives. The people on these tapes are moms or even grandmas now. And this is probably the best thing they've ever done.
That's not very fair.
Millie's voice is quiet.
Just because maybe these women have stayed here in Clover City, or have become stay-at-home moms or cashiers, doesn't mean you can deem their entire lives outside of the pageant a waste.
Hannah says nothing, but her lips nearly tremble.
Listen, Hannah, she adds. I know people have been cruel to you, but...
I'm going to bed.
She tucks her pillow beneath her arm and heads back to Millie's room. After she's gone, I wait for Millie to say something about how horrible Hannah is. But she keeps whatever thoughts she might have to herself. The three of us stay there for a while longer. Millie tells us how she used the piggy bank she's had since first grade to order a dress from Cindy's.
I had sleeves added, but at the last minute, decided to have them made with organza instead of satin, so it's almost see-through. I'm kind of nervous about how it'll turn out.
I'm sure you'll look amazing, I tell her. She smiles and nods. It's dark, so I can't know for sure, but her eyes look watery. I want to wake her parents up and tell them that their daughter is competing in a beauty pageant and that she's going to win. At least she would if it was up to me. Chapter 51. I take the couch for the night to give myself some quiet. I slip in and out of sleep the way you do when you're sleeping in a house that isn't your own, except at Elle's. I could always sleep. Maybe it's 30 minutes or 2 hours, I don't know. But the house creaks as someone walks down the hallway. I turn over so that I can catch a glimpse of whoever it is. Slipping through a sliver of moonlight, Hannah makes her way to the kitchen. Without thinking about it, I pull back my blankets and follow her. She stands in front of the fridge, the white light turning her into a silhouette. I flip the overhead light on. She jumps a little and turns around. But the tension in her shoulders eases when she sees it's me.
I'm looking for a bottle of water.
Then what's up with the beer? I ask, pointing to the can of Miller in her fist.
Found them in the garage fridge. Thought I'd see if there were any more in here.
She opens the fridge door wide to show me nothing but bottled water and Diet Dr. Pepper.
No one's going to miss these, though.
She points to several cans on the counter.
You want one?
Yeah, I say, surprising myself. I bet Millie's mom isn't too thrilled by the idea of beer in the house, so technically we're doing Mr. and Mrs. Michael Chuck a favor. Sure. We sit in the dark on the couch sipping our beers. The moon shines against the window pane, casting a shadow on the carpet.
So what's up with that guy who dropped you off tonight?
Asks Hannah. What guy?
I'm trying to be nice, okay?
It's true. In the dark, she seems like a less hostile version of herself. Like, maybe she's most comfortable when no one can see her.
I heard Amanda and Millie blabbering about him when they came to bed. Peach butt, huh?
Beau, if she's willing to put the claws away, I can give her a few ounces of truth, I guess. Beau Larson, we work together. We're, friends.
Ah.
She takes a long slurp from her beer.
Bathroom boy. I remember now. He's in my study hall. Dude's like an 8. A solid 8. I don't even like guys, and I like looking at him.
I search for her in the darkness. Did Hannah just come out to me? I don't know what to say or do, but I do know that I don't really care whether Hannah likes boys or girls, so I decide not to say anything.
Yeah, he's a little too delicious.
And a 10, I think. Definitely a 10.
Friends, huh? Didn't look like friends when I saw you two.
I can hear her smiling.
In the girls' bathroom, no less.
I shrug, which is dumb because she can't see me.
Friends who sometimes make out.
She whistles. My cheeks and chest burn. I hope it's the beer. She pops the tab on a second beer.
How'd that happen?
It's been on and off, I guess. I don't know. It's starting to become more, and he wants to be something official. And it's so stupid because, yes, obviously that is everything I want, but...
But guys like Beau don't date girls like us.
The way she says it. It's not mean or rude. It's true. I nod. Exactly. I don't get why he likes me. But I truly believe that he does. I really do. It's just that I don't think anyone else will understand what he sees in me.
That's a tough one, she says. People are shit. Look at people like Patrick Thomas. You dating a guy like Beau would be a field day for him.
It's nice to talk to someone who understands. Hannah may not get what it feels like to wonder if you're going to fit into a chair with armrests, or how any time a floor creaks beneath your weight, everyone looks at you, like you're about to break the entire building. She might not get what it's like to walk into a mall and know that 90% of the clothes won't fit you, or that even thinking about going to a buffet is a bad idea, because a fat person at a buffet is a joke waiting to happen. But she's not patting me on the back and telling me to do what makes me happy. And there's some relief in that. I wish that there was some kind of alternate plane we could exist on where he could be my boyfriend. It's the first time I've said the word out loud, and it sends a hum all the way through me to my toes. And no one had to know.
But isn't that the point of labels like boyfriend and girlfriend? To make things easier for other people? She slurps her beer. Isn't that sad? It's like the whole world has to walk around with name tags on so we can all feel more comfortable. I guess things are less scary if you know what to call them.
We drink our beers in silence. Her words sound right, but feel wrong. Yeah, labels make it easier for others to understand you. But I like the safety of knowing, especially with Beau. That's why I haven't given him an answer yet. I can't bear to tell him no. Hannah, I want to ask you a question. It's rude, but I'm not asking to be rude. Although that doesn't really make it any better.
Shoot, she says.
Why haven't you gotten your teeth fixed?
Why should I have to?
She retorts immediately. Her voice softens as she adds,
plus, it's expensive. Mom's a hairdresser. Dad's a mechanic. Not like we have great insurance or anything.
You're right, I say. You shouldn't have to. She clears her throat.
I don't mean to be such a bitch, you know.
It's okay. She laughs.
I wasn't apologizing. But it's hard not to have my claws out all the time. I don't have friends like you do. There's no one there to walk down the hallway with me.
You have friends. Don't be stupid. But I can close my eyes and see her at school, wearing black from head to toe and with her mouth stretched over her teeth so that maybe people will just forget.
I want to sabotage this pageant from the inside out. That was the only reason I entered. I wouldn't be the girl with buck teeth. I'd be that girl who ruined the whole pageant.
She pauses.
But then my mom found out. She saw the welcome packet. She was so proud of me for entering. And now...
You're stuck actually doing this thing. It makes sense. If people treated me half as bad as they do Hannah, I would want to ruin this whole thing too.
I'm going to bed, she says. Give me your empties. I'll throw them out at my place.
I finish the last of my beer. Her hand reaches out and I pass her my two cans. I feel the couch shift as she stands. I don't know where she is or if she's even facing me, but I say, I'm your friend. Not in a corny way. Not because you said all that about not having friends, but because I like you. I like talking to you. It's so quiet. For a moment, I think maybe she's not even in the room. Her voice comes as a whisper. Okay. I miss Ellen. I will never stop missing Ellen. But there's a sigh of relief that comes in having another friend who I can talk to about more than this dumb pageant, even if it's only in the dark. The next morning when I get home, I find my mom upstairs in Lucy's room. Neither of us has really been in here much since she started the craft room transformation. She's been caught up in pageant stuff. And I've been too wrapped up in myself, so Lucy's room has sort of been sitting here. Briefly, I wonder if, like me, she snuck in here for moments at a time, just to see Lucy, to be near her. But today my mom's got her ridiculous juicy couture tracksuit on and has boxes labeled donate. She's not here to visit Lucy. She's here to get rid of her. When my mom is frustrated, she cleans. Her cleaning out Lucy's room frustrates me. These two negatives do not equal a positive. She and I are still on eggshells over the dress, and honestly, if she doesn't let me wear it, I'm done for. I have no other options. A fat girl can't just walk into a thrift shop and, poof, find a decent dress that actually fits. And that's what really pisses me off about the dress thing. She's the head honcho, the lady calling the shots. All she has to say is yes. I have a hard enough time finding jeans to wiggle over my ass. You'd think she'd be shooting confetti cannons over me being able to find a not hideous, not stretchy dress that zips. It zips. But the room. There she is digging, pawing through Lucy's things, and every little movement feels like I've accidentally touched the coils of a hot stove. What are you even doing in here? My voice is already too loud and too sharp. She glances back at me.
I didn't hear you come in.
She turns back.
This stuff can't sit here forever. You know, I hope that when I die, you don't let my belongings gather dust for months like this. These are Lucy's things, Mom. This stuff belongs to her.
Baby, she says.
Belonged. These things belong to her. We're coming up on a year in December. I'm not letting all this sit here like some kind of shrine.
I shake my head. Tears spill out onto my cheeks. A year. A whole year.
Stop, I say. Please, stop.
She turns to me now. Panic flashes across her face. I think that maybe I will forever judge her based on what she does and says at this very moment. We don't have this kind of relationship. I don't cry on my mother's shoulder. We dance around each other, but never intersect. Her house shoes slap against the floor as she takes the few steps toward me. I lean forward, expecting her to hug me. And I don't mean her wrapping her arms around my waist and commenting on how her fingers nearly touch. I mean a real hug, one I can sink into.
I'm taking all this stuff to the shelter this weekend. If there's anything you want, now's the time to pull it out.
She pats my shoulder.
I'm going to go put together some lunch before you have to go to work.
The door closes behind her, and I sink down onto Lucy's bed. The memory of the last few weeks washes over me. I have no dress. A not really maybe boyfriend who I can't bear to be seen with in public because I feel that repulsive when I think of us standing side by side. Mitch, who I've been horrible to. My mom, Ellen, and now Lucy. I need Lucy. She should be here to tell me what to do. Some solution that would never even occur to me without her. I consider the things I can change. The dress. I could eat lettuce until the pageant, and maybe then it will fit like how my mom had imagined. But then what? It's that vicious dieting cycle. Like when I was younger, I would lose the weight to wear the dress, and then what? I start eating food that's not lettuce and gain it all back, maybe even some extra. All the pageant season diets my mom and I have done flip through my head like index cards. Protein bars in fourth grade, Weight Watchers in fifth, salads in second, and none of it ever worked. She wins. My mom wins. I didn't even know this was some kind of competition with her until this moment. But I'm losing. I have no dress, barely any talent, and an escort whose heart I'm breaking without him even knowing it. If I do this pageant, I'll make a point, that's for sure. It just won't be the one I want to be remembered for. Chapter 52. Sitting in the break room later that night, I use a compact mirror to examine the green ring around my neck in the reflection. I snap the mirror shut like a clam, then take the fake gold necklace off and lay it out on the table. The gold chain is that twisty type of chain they sell at mall kiosks, and the charm says Dolly in a bubbly cursive script. I end up fitting as much of Lucy's stuff as I could in my closet. I try my best to get all her Dolly collectibles, including a pair of glitter-encrusted shoes Dolly wore to a show in Vegas. The soles are signed in her big, loopy signature, proving their authenticity. Beau plops down in the chair next to me.
What's that?
I drag the chain around with my index finger so that he can see it. It was my aunt's. He nods. My mom's cleaning out her room. Again. It's happened in small spurts in the last few months. But I think she's serious this time.
I'm sorry.
He drags his finger along the chain.
When my mom was dying, she kind of cleaned out her room for us. Like, as soon as she found out it was bad, she started inviting people over and no one ever left empty-handed. By the time she was gone, all that was left were a few nightgowns and some shoes.
He concentrates on the necklace, his jaw twitching.
I was kind of mad at her for doing that. But I don't think I could have done it myself anyway. If it had been up to my dad, we'd still be using her perfume as air freshener.
Beau watches me for a moment before yanking on the leg of my chair and pulling me closer to him. He wraps his arm around me, and I ease into his frame. My breathing hitches a little, but that voice in my head that begs me not to let him touch me is nothing more than a murmur. His lips press against my hair, sending calming vibrations through me.
Am I interrupting something?
Mitch stands in the doorway with a brown grocery bag clenched in his fist. I pick my head up so quickly that I hit Beau's jaw. I'm sorry, I say. But to which of them, I'm not sure. Panic sinks all the way down to my toes, holding me in place. Hi, I say to Mitch. Hey, what are you doing here? Beau stands, rubbing the spot where my head collided with his.
I better get back to work.
His voice is rigid. The tension between them buzzes like an electric fence. Mitch doesn't move out of his way, so Beau squeezes past him. He watches Beau go before stepping through the doorway.
The guy at the front told me you were back here.
He drops the bag on the table, and whatever's inside rattles for a second.
I got you some magic supplies for your talent.
I try too hard to keep my voice light. Sit down. He doesn't.
Who was that guy?
Beau, we work together. His two brows crinkle into one.
Do you like him?
What? We were talking, Mitch. I sound defensive because I am. So we kissed once. We hold hands sometimes. That doesn't make us anything. And yet maybe it does. It's not like he caught me making out with Beau or in a state of undress, but I feel just as guilty.
Do you?
He asks again. I tuck my hair behind my ears and take a long moment before I answer. I do. He shakes his head and pulls down on the bill of his baseball cap.
Good luck with the pageant, Will.
He turns on his heel and exits through the nearest door, which happens to be the employee exit. My heart aches from losing one of my precious few friends, knowing all too well that if this is anyone's fault, it's mine. That night, Beau drives me home in silence. I'm halfway up the driveway when I hear his door slam shut as he says,
I wish you would give me an answer.
He circles around the front of his truck. What? I walk back toward him. We have to do this tonight?
I want to be with you, he says. But I can't if you won't let me.
Why? I drop my bag in the driveway. Why do you want to be with this? I wave my arm up and down the length of my body. Immediately, I hate myself for this. The only person making this about my body is me.
Because I like you. I think I might feel a lot more than that for you, Willow Dean. How is that so hard to believe? When I can't fall asleep at night, it's not because of work or school or Amber or Becca. It's you. You're the one that drives me crazy.
I shake my head because it makes no sense. Have you ever thought about what people will think? What they'll say when they see us together holding hands?
You never struck me as the type to give a shit what everyone else thinks.
His jaw twitches for a moment before he lowers his voice and says,
I want to go everywhere with you. I want to show you off. I want to wear a cheap suit and be your escort for that ridiculous pageant.
My teeth chatter.
I'm trying so hard not to cry. Because it's all there. I like him. He likes me. But there's so much more. I can't believe it even matters to me. But I'm not going to be skinny anytime soon, and I shouldn't care. I'm pissed that I didn't just throw myself at him right here in my driveway. But I refuse to hate him for being another reason for people to whisper about me. I can't. That might make me a coward, but the tears are more than a threat now. He meets me where I am. And because of the downward tilt of the driveway, we are toe to toe, nose to nose.
Willow Dean Opal Dixon, you are beautiful. Fuck anyone who's ever made you feel anything less.
His chest heaves.
When I close my eyes, I see you. I can talk to you in a way I never have with anyone else.
Beautiful, he says. Fat, I think. But can I be both at the same time?
I lift my hand to his cheek, and the tension bubbling beneath his skin eases. I kiss him once more on the lips. I linger there for a moment, remembering all the details of everything I shouldn't be allowed to have.
I can't, I whisper, knowing that I'm talking about so much more than just me and Beau.
I turn around and pick up my bag. He stands in the driveway until I switch my bedroom light off, turning my house into a dark shell. Chapter 53. On Monday, as I'm walking out of class, Mitch reaches for my elbow. Mr. Crispin has already run off for the teacher's lounge, and everyone's cleared out. It's just us.
I'm wanted to say that I don't think I should be your escort for the pageant.
I look up at him, but he only lets her eyes meet for a second before looking away.
I'm not doing the pageant anyway.
I hadn't said it out loud until this very moment, but I made my decision on Saturday night, standing in my driveway with Beau. I can see his thoughts moving across his features. Thoughts of him trying to convince me, telling me about the bright side. But he says nothing. And I'm sorry, I add much too late. I didn't mean for you to get hurt.
But you like him?
I nod.
I'm sorry doesn't make it better, he says. That would have been really good to you.
More than I deserve. I want to tell him how close he'd come. And that had I never met Beau, he'd be it. But I met Beau. And now I know what it feels like for one person's name to wreck you. He stuffs his hands into the pockets of his jacket and walks out. I give him a few seconds head start before I leave for my class on the other side of campus. I take my time. I'd rather be late than out of breath. No one likes to see a fat girl huffing and puffing. The last bell rings and the hall's clear. And then Ellen slips out of the last classroom on the right. At first, she doesn't see me. She wipes her eyes. She's crying. It could be about anything. But whatever it is, I don't know about it. She glances back and sees me trailing a few feet behind her. She stops, not bothering to wipe her face free of the tears streaming down her cheeks. Maybe she and Tim broke up. Maybe she got in a fight with her new friends. Maybe she failed a test. I don't know. This is my moment to step up, to ask her how she's doing and apologize for everything. But she turns and rushes into the bathroom. The moment is gone. I don't stay for any of my other classes. This day has already gone wrong in too many ways for me to risk sticking around. When I get home, there's a text from Millie asking if we should all get together to practice our talents. The pageant. It doesn't even matter anymore. When I entered, I did it for Lucy, and with Ellen by my side. But Lucy's dead,
and Ellen is further away than ever. I text Millie, Hannah, and Amanda. Me. I can't do the pageant. It's short notice, I know. But I'm backing out. Y'all are going to be amazing. You deserve to be there. I'll be cheering you on from the audience. After calling into work sick for the night, I turn my phone off and decide to keep it that way for the entire evening. Chapter 54. I spend Tuesday and Wednesday faking a fever and nursing a bag of mini chocolate chips I found in the pantry from a few holidays ago. We're not the type of household that just has sweets on hand. Surprise! Especially with my mom still on Operation Squeeze into Pageant Gown. When I tell my mom I'm not feeling well, she closes my bedroom door without any questions. "Sorry, sweetheart," she says. "Can't risk getting sick. You take the day off." For Mom, every single moment not spent on an elliptical at the YMCA or at work is a crafting 911. Our house is a war zone of fabric, props, and sequins, but the chaos of it actually gives me some quiet. I want, no, need a few days to be a total slob. I haven't showered since Sunday. And it's oddly comforting to know that I look almost as disgusting as I feel. When Ron gave me the week of the pageant off work, I don't think this is what he had in mind. By Wednesday night, the freedom is fading, and I find myself lying face down on my bed listening to one of Lucy's records, which turns out to basically be the worst of Dolly Parton. The songs I like to forget she ever did, like Me and Little Andy. I mean, what the hell with that song, Dolly? It's about a little girl and her dog dying. Who even wants to hear that? The front doorbell rings, interrupting my inner rant. I smile into my comforter. I couldn't answer it even if I wanted to. It rings again. My mother must not be home. And again and again. I push myself off my bed and take my time going down the stairs. Standing on my toes, I look through the peephole. Sigh. I bang my head against the door. "What do you want?" I yell. "Let me in," says Hannah. "Come on!" She rings the doorbell over and over again, 9, maybe 10 times. "Come around back," I finally yell. She doesn't even ask why. I stand with the back door open, and she brushes right past me. Riot sniffs her out for a second before running off.
"I've called you like 85 times this weekend," says Hannah. "I don't even like talking on the phone."
She hands me a Tupperware full of stew.
"My mom wanted me to bring you some of her sancocho."
"Your mom?" I open the fridge and wedge the container between a carton of milk and a jug of orange juice. "I've never even met your mom."
"Well, you're like her favorite person ever because of this stupid pageant. So I hope you're pleased with yourself."
She plops down into my mom's seat at the kitchen table. Hannah's the type of person who can be comfortable in anyone's home, I think. There's none of that extra care most people have when they're in a new place for the first time. She leans forward on the table with both elbows.
"You can't quit the pet. Wait, are you listening to Dolly Parton?"
I shrug. She glances up at me and takes note of my current state.
"There is so much wrong with this picture."
I pour a cold cup of coffee and pop it in the microwave. "I guess if by wrong you mean right, then yeah."
"When's the last time you showered?"
The microwave dings.
"Showers are so subjective," I shrug.
"Let's go upstairs."
"Only if you turn off that horrible music."
Upstairs, I pick the needle up from the record as Hannah spreads out on my bed. She takes the magic eight ball from my nightstand and shakes it.
"Has Will lost her shit totally?"
She reads the answer.
"You may rely on it."
I sit down at the foot of the bed and lay across the length of it on my back. Maybe this will be easier if I can stare at the ceiling the whole time.
"Okay, so something happened with bathroom boy, I'm guessing."
"Boys, there were two. And I don't even know why I wanted to do this in the first place." I stretch my arms out and let them hang off the edge of the bed. "Maybe I thought I deserved all the same things all those other girls do. I don't know. but I'm different from other girls. And even if I do deserve the same things they do, that doesn't mean I'll get them. Me getting up there and competing against them would only prove that.
Nope, says Hannah. I call bullshit. You don't deserve to win anything or be in any pageant until you make the effort and do the work. Maybe fat girls or girls with limps or girls with big teeth don't usually win beauty pageants. Maybe that's not the norm. But the only way to change that is to be present. We can't expect the same things these other girls do until we demand it. Because no one's lining up to give us shit, Will. That's easy for you to say. I walk into a room and the first thing anyone notices is how fucking huge I am in comparison. But for you, all you have to do is keep your mouth shut. No one knows the difference.
Whoa, she says. Low blow. Yeah, I can keep my mouth shut until I have something to say. You try being the half-Dominican lesbian with buck teeth in this town, okay?
I shake my head. I'm sorry. I'm a mess and you're projecting, whatever.
This is still bullshit. If you're not going to do this for you, do it for Amanda and Millie.
She chews her lip and stares past me into the mirror in front of my bed.
And me too, I guess.
You guys will be fine without me.
No, actually, we won't. Millie can't compete unless you do.
I sit up. What are you talking about?
Her parents found out about the pageant, she says with nonchalance. Millie begged and begged. She told them about how your mom runs the thing, so they said if you were competing, then so could she.
She pauses for effect.
Then you dropped out.
Guilt settles in my chest. I lick my chapped lips. Slowly, I'm becoming aware of how gross I feel after going the whole weekend without a shower. Listen, that sucks really bad, but...
But what? Please tell me you're not that selfish.
She's right. This isn't a joke for Millie. This is about idolizing and studying these pageant contestants her whole life, and finally allowing herself to be one. My leg bounces up and down as I think. I don't know that this would earn me any good karma. I might be too much in the negative for that. But I owe this to Millie. If I'm not going to go out there and grab life by the balls like she is, I should at least offer the courtesy of not standing in her way. Hannah reaches over to my leg, stilling me. I turn to her. This is going to be a total disaster, I tell her. She smiles with her mouth barely open.
I'm kind of counting on it.
Chapter 55. Boys get out of school to travel to football games. So I guess it shouldn't be that much of a surprise that every contestant is given the Friday before the pageant off from school. The extra day is spent in interviews and grueling dress rehearsals. We're talking blisters, double stick tape, and tears all over the place. This isn't some low-budget high school musical. This is Clover City's Miss Teen Bluebonnet pageant. Last night, Hannah drove me to the community theater where my mom was setting up so that I could have my entire wardrobe approved. Seeing as I couldn't wear my formal, I had to go for a sequined black mother-of-the-bride-looking thing I found in one of my mom's donation piles in Lucy's room. It was wrinkled, but new with tags. My mom, Mallory Buckley, and Mrs. Clausen all made me promise to steam it before Saturday. As for a swimsuit, my options were limited to my black one-piece and the red and white polka dot one I bought last summer but hadn't had the balls to wear. I chose the red. Go big or go home. Plus, the black swimsuit has little lint balls all over the butt. Metallic costume was another thing. I dug through my room until I found the flapper headband I'd worn on Halloween. I had the black dress from Lucy's funeral, and my mom agreed to lend me her black satin gloves if I returned them before she had to wear them for the formal wear segment. On Thursday morning, as I'm getting ready, Mom comes in to see what I'm wearing for my interview.
I like that skirt, she says, but maybe add the teal blazer I got you for your birthday.
I look in the mirror, considering her suggestion a nod. We drive to the Silver Dollar Banquet Hall where the interviews and luncheon will take place today. The air conditioning buzzes above the twang of the radio. With Thanksgiving next week, it's getting pretty cool. But Mom's got the air blasting because she's got the flashes. We park and she wriggles into her dusty rose suit jacket,